91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour, we feature the renowned Young Arts Program along with its National Young Arts Foundation. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. The Young Arts Program began in 1981 and remains Miami-based. There are performances and exhibitions at prestigious venues, including MoMA, the Met, the JFK Center for the Performing Arts, the Smithsonian, and the New World Center. There are cash awards, residency programs, workshops with master teachers, and a large Young Arts alumni network of some 20,000 members. We'll learn more about the Young Arts programs next. Topical Currents, after the news. Today's Topical Currents, Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Our focus this hour is the Young Arts Program, now in its fourth decade of nurturing the most accomplished new artists in the visual, literary, design, and performing arts.
The Young Arts Experience helps at critical junctures of educational and professional development. It's a national program headquartered in Miami, and we have the National Young Arts Foundation President and CEO with us.
She's Carolina Garcia Jayaram, who's come aboard in 2016. She's an active member of the Miami, Chicago, and New York arts communities for years. Welcome.
Thank you.
Also with us is a Young Arts alumna in voice and theater, Kelly Kessel. She's also the alumni community coordinator at Young Arts. Welcome to you.
And in studio is the renowned filmmaker Andrew Hevia, an alumnus of Young Arts. He's the co-producer of the Oscar Award-winning Best Picture film, Moonlight. He's a Fulbright scholar, and he's working on a follow-up to the acclaimed Moonlight film, a thriller shot in Hong Kong. Welcome to you, Andrew Hevia.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
And also a WLRN alumnus.
Also
yes.
True.
Let's start with Moonlight, okay? And not Andrew, but we're going to go to Carolina. We're going to get to you, Andrew, I promise. What did Moonlight do for Young Arts? Did it have an impact on the organization?
Well, we played, I think a minor but specific role early on in helping provide some space and support to the filmmakers, to Andrew and his team. It was before my time, so
okay.
He can speak more to what that was like. Okay. But it went straight to our mission of helping our alumni in numerous different ways. So it's helped impact us in that it's driving the mission forward the way that we hope to keep moving.
And just, we'll get back to Young Arts and everything about it. But Andrew, what did that do? How important was Young Arts in your career?
Well, I mean, what's interesting is one of the best things about Young Arts is the way that it has sort of prioritize and help filter relationships. So when I consider that my relationship with the Young Arts began in high school 15 years ago, and but continued through their community and alumni development programs. So when I moved back to Miami, Young Arts was a big factor in sort of me being involved with a lot of locals working here in Miami, and they supported our early work and they supported those kind of projects. And a lot of the people I work with in Miami are Young Arts alums.
So is that how you met Terrell Alvin McCraney?
So I met Terrell through New World School of the Arts, where we both went to high school.
Okay.
But seeing him at Young Arts events allowed that to sort of continue and grow. Mm-hmm. And then on Moonlight specifically, I was an alum, Terrell was an alum, and our composer, Nicholas Bertel, who was nominated for an Academy Award, was also a Young Arts alum. We didn't discover that until much later.
How ironic.
But yeah, it was one of these great things that really pointed out how Young Arts has been so successful at identifying talent early and cultivating that. So when you realize now, I'm fortunate to work with some really talented people, and a shockingly high number of them are Young Arts alums. And now it comes out over dinner parties. You're like, oh, I'm doing this thing with Young Arts. And someone says, you know, I'm an alum. And I think that's just been extraordinary.
Kelly Kessel, tell us more about you and your experience with Young Arts. At least
sure.
On the performance side first.
Yeah. I was a winner in 2012 in Popular Voice. I also got a small award for theater. I'm also a New World alum, so shout out to New World people. And I did the program in 2012. I am a Miami native, so I did their regional program in Miami as well as the Young Arts Week for finalists. And then I went on later that year to become a U.S. Presidential Scholar in the Arts and perform in the Kennedy Center for just hundreds of people.
What was that like?
What is that, a U.S. Presidential Scholar in the Arts?
So Young Arts is the sole nominating agency for a U.S. Presidential Scholar in the Arts. So there's a program, U.S. Presidential Scholars Program, that has a board of commissioners that chooses, I'd say, about two people from each state, depending on their SAT scores, grades. There's a very rigorous application process once you're nominated. And then Young Arts chooses about 60 people a year to nominate, and 20 are chosen every year to be presidential scholars in the arts specifically. And Young Arts has this really cool project where you go to D.C. and perform at the Kennedy Center. You put on a show within a week. Actually, this year's presidential scholars are there right now forming a show that will be performed next Monday, actually. So that experience for me was incredible, just being in the Kennedy Center with some of my best friends now. You know, you grow these relationships with people that are passionate about the same thing you are. In such a cool way, you're there with them creating something special and showcasing it to the world. So that was cool to be recognized in that way, but also really spectacular to have that experience.
Carolina, let's bring you in because we haven't gotten an overview of Young Arts yet. its history, exactly who they are, who you are, and what you do.
Sure. So we were founded 36 years ago. We're now in our 36th year, and we're founded really to do exactly what these two are doing, to identify the next generation of our country's most important, talented, hardworking artists across all genres. So you read all those disciplines before, but within those disciplines are many sub-disciplines. So within music, there's jazz and voice and classical. And
is there composition and conducting?
Yes, composition. Yes, we have had conductors as well. Mm-hmm. So everything you can really imagine has come out of the program. And so since its first year, it's essentially been a competition for thousands and thousands of 15 to 18-year-olds who apply from around the country. And the few hundred who are selected are able to come through our core program, is what we call it. So it's a week of very intensive access that we provide to master teachers in the discipline which the artist is studying. For the most part, in the finalists week. And the regionals week, we do more multidisciplinary work. So we do this intensive week four times a year, twice in Miami, once in Los Angeles, and once in New York. And so over these many years, we've graduated many thousands of alumni who've gone on to do work in every field you can imagine. And as Andrew says, I mean, they pop up in at the Grammys, at the Emmys, at, you know, anywhere you can imagine. They're incredibly talented artists of today. So we're very proud of the fact that we have, I think, cornered this market in a way of identifying at a very young age the artists who have both the talent and the rigor to go on to great careers. And so that's what we've been doing.
I have a little history tidbit for you about the organization you might not be aware of, but it came out of the National Foundation for the Advancement of the Arts.
That was the earlier name.
Right.
Yes.
And the first concert was recorded and broadcast on WLRN-TV.
Oh.
We recorded it at the Coconut Grove Playhouse in 1981. I ran audio on it.
Wow.
I can remember.
Joe, it's hard
that
to
was
believe.
The first
it's
year.
Hard to believe.
That was the first year.
It was
and
the
so
first concert.
That's an important part of it, too. The weeks that we have here are open to the public, you know, so we want to share this incredible talent.
The Young Arts Week.
The Young
Explain
Arts
what that is.
So in January, the young artists who come here from around the country, like I said, during the day, we're working them super hard. They're in master classes all day long. And then in the evening, they get together and do performances at New World, at New World Symphony on the beach. And those are open to the public.
Are those performances, are they spontaneous, or they're given a piece they have to work on?
They're directed. You know, we have professional directors directing each one of those shows. But to me, it's when I can get people to go who've never experienced it. Every single time, people are just completely blown away because it's not a typical high school show. I mean, these are, I like to describe them as like Olympians. You know, they're so focused and so ahead of where you would expect a 16 or 17 year old to be in their artistic journey. I've worked with professional artists my whole career. This is the first time really working with this age group of teenagers, and I'm blown away every time I'm around them. So they are professionally directed shows, but for the most part, because they're so professional, a jazz group of five or six players who've just met a couple of days before put a show together, you'd think they'd been working
right.
on it for months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it is very turnaround time.
Touch on
it
the
is.
Master teachers, the list.
Yeah, I was just
going to
do that.
Incredible.
If you want to look at this list, I did want to focus on some of those master teachers.
So the master teachers, this is such an interesting, I think, value of the program too, is that for master teachers, I think they too get so much out of this experience because they are getting this highly vetted group of young artists who they then get to sort of riff off of in many ways and learn from about what's the next generation of artists, what are they thinking about, mm-hmm. what are they working on. Every generation of artists has a very different process in how they work. And so that alone is, I think, very interesting for the
master
teachers.
Not to mention
how
individual artists have a
right.
different process.
And these are all extremely in demand artists, very, very busy people. We just had Micheline Thomas actually in New York, and you know, she shows all over the world. She's a major contemporary visual artist of today, and she's loves teaching this particular group. You know, she gets so much out of it. Of course, the big names that we see here are Frank Gehry, of course, Mikhail Brishnikov, who's taught for us many years, and also our New York program. The performances in New York take place at his center, the Brishnikov Art Center. He oftentimes directs a show for one of the nights there.
That must
so
be
he's
so
heavily
thrilling.
Involved. It is thrilling.
And then Josh Groban.
Yes, Josh Groban, who's been very, you know, he's an alumni also, but he's been just very involved and very generous with us. He himself has his own foundation that's about arts education, so it's a personal passion of his.
And name some others.
Some others here, Blasi Domingo, who's actually also a board member, so it's quite a gift to have him and his amazing talent with us. Salman Rushdie teaches in literature, of course. I just sat in on his class in New York. And again, you know, you can't believe you're listening to Salman Rushdie speak, but he then speaks personally about how growing up in India, he never had access to a program like this. And it was, if anything, discouraged to be a professional writer. So imagine what he had to overcome, what the world would have not had if
right.
he hadn't overcome
right.
that. So for us, it's very important to open the doors so that people like him feel very supported in the journey.
That's Carolina Garcia Jayaram. She's the president and CEO of Young Arts. Also with us is Kelly Kessel. She's an alumna in voice and theater and the alumni community coordinator at Young Arts. Also, Andrew Hevia, Young Arts alumnus and co-producer of this year's Academy Award-winning best film, Moonlight. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
When it comes to you and me, babe, now I'm sure wasting time is just a minute.
Sounds pretty professional to me.
'Cause it's not wasting time at all if it's you I'm
with. That's Victoria Canal. She's a 2015 Young Arts winner in voice, and she was also a U.S. Presidential Scholar in the Arts in 2015.
Yes.
Again, Victoria Canal, an 18-year-old Spanish-American singer, songwriter, and a U.S. Presidential Scholar in the Arts in 2015.
Singing Not Afraid.
Not Afraid. Really good.
Yeah, very good. Let me ask you something, Carolina. How do you, now that Young Arts has been on the map for quite some time, I'm wondering if you plan on expanding it to getting young emerging artists before they are at the stage of those who win, you know, these spots mm-hmm. at Young Arts, like when they're younger, especially for those who aren't as fortunate enough to be able to go to New World School of the Arts or something like that, but have the talent?
It's a great question because it's very much the focus of this next stage for the organization. So for 36 years, our focus has been this high school age. And although we've kept the network going and supported them here and there in different ways, we haven't had a real dedicated alumni program. So part of what was exciting to me about coming into this role a year ago was to build this truly robust and meaningful alumni project or alumni program, which focuses on what we consider the next critical stage of an artist's life, which is when they're coming out of their MFA years or around that time in their mid-20s to mid-30s, when they're especially vulnerable and, you know, full of ideas and talent, but not necessarily getting the investment from the field that they need to go forward. So we're building a campus essentially to help support that work and help support propel them and to do what I think we're uniquely positioned to do, which is to create these networks and opportunities for them to meet and work together across disciplines, collaborate, and then through national partnerships that we can create new platforms for them. So that is very much our focus now moving forward. And I think it's a space within the arts ecosystem nationally that isn't right now working for artists very well.
Now, you had plans to expand and to build a campus, mm-hmm. right? And Frank Gehry was to design that, is that correct?
He's an old friend and, as you know, a master teacher for the program. He is close to the family who helped start the organization, the Arisons family who built New World, as you know, New World Symphony. So he's, you know, we've been in talks with him. He has designed the buildings that we're in right now, went through a major renovation, and he designed the interiors for that renovation. For the new campus build, there's a possibility that we'll work with him, but we're not totally committed yet to what we're doing because we're figuring out the design for that building now, or those buildings, that campus.
What genre of the arts generates the most Young Arts applications?
Usually it's visual arts is our biggest of the disciplines, but it shifts every year. It's dance is becoming bigger and bigger every year, but all of the disciplines are well represented. Design is our newest, so it tends to be our smallest so far, because other than Dash, which is such an exceptional school here in Miami, there aren't a lot of high schools in the country specific to architecture and design. So a lot of kids that may end up in that aren't studying that in high school per se.
Kelly, as the coordinator, the alumni community coordinator, what does that entail?
So because we have such a large alumni community, there's a lot that goes into keeping people connected, making sure that our alumni are committed to staying involved, and also a part on Young Arts to want them to be, to make them want to be involved, right? So for me, a lot of my work is kind of creating relationships and building those relationships with alumni as much as possible and creating opportunities and making sure that, you know, those opportunities are available to our alumni.
Like what kind of opportunities?
A good example is we work really closely with the Met. They have this program that started a few years ago, I think, called Young Arts at the Met. And so the Met works very closely with us to curate our, you know, a group of our alumni to play their instruments that they have in the museum. And they have these donor events in which our alumni exclusively play and are kind of opened up to this new community, and more opportunities are brought because of those opportunities.
And you do that and have this career.
Yes. Yeah, as much as possible. Obviously, it's tough being an artist and having a full-time job, but, you know, it's something that I'm passionate about. And this work, too, being an alum, this is a community that I care very deeply about. And, you know,
born here and raised here, right?
Yes, yes. So, you know, this work as a part of Young Arts is really special to me, and being an artist is really special to me. So it's something that I think, you know, I'm trying to make work both at the same time.
Well, let's hear a little bit of this is Kelly Kessel.
You don't know me like you think you do. Nothing more than strangers. I'm just an image of someone you once knew. take your memories and go. This is where the road ends. I'm not yours to control. I'm not your lover and I'm not your friend.
And that is Kelly Kessel, born and raised in South Florida, 2012 Young Arts graduate, and she's singing The Line. Did you write this as well?
I did, yes.
Wow.
And the hits just keep on coming.
Yeah.
You play the game like you'll win them all. I bet you've had it easy, but baby, I'm not the kind to fall. Take your briefcase of lies, you can let the charade.
So you wrote the lyrics and the music?
Yeah, this was a song that I wrote maybe 4 years ago. And I worked very closely during my college years with a group called Why Not Why. It was two of my friends who were producers. And so this was a song that I wrote, I brought to the table, and they helped produce it and make it what you hear today.
Really good, Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly Kessel, The Line. What are you working on now?
Right now, I'm taking some time to kind of figure out what my sound is, and you know what writing means to me. You know who I am as an artist. When you're in school, and when you're, you know, in this program of just always pursuing the next thing, right? For me, it was high school and then college and, you know, get a job and that kind of thing. You're not really focusing on who you are as a person. And for me, making meaningful art and art that's authentic to, you know, what I'm going through and what I'm feeling is really important to me. So the last few months I've been taking a step back and trying to revisit that and, you know, making sure that the art that I'm creating, the songs that I'm writing are really true to myself. So
Andrew Hevia, did you go through that process, a similar process?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely. I think it's a necessary stage, especially after after graduating a program. Like when I went to film school at Florida State, you spend so much time learning the craft and the mechanics, you have to come back and then sort of figure out what you want to do now that you know the craft and the mechanics. For me, that was coming back to Miami, and that was working with an organization I founded with some friends here called the Borscht Corporation.
Yeah, tell us about that. And again, I find it an interesting name. I mean, especially because of the Borscht Belt, you know.
Absolutely no relation.
No relation. And you're not Jewish, and it's not Jewish. Is it based on the soup?
No,
okay.
No. I mean, it's for better or worse, it was a name we came up with while we were students in high school, and it sounded absurd enough to be interesting. And we really were interested in having a film event that didn't say film festival in the title.
Okay.
But ultimately, what it was a collaborative group of artists who wanted to make films. Were making films together and decided we would build a platform for our own work. And the festival, you know, began as sort of a side project, but over the years became a much more serious venture. And in 2007, 2008, Lucas Leyva and I were back in Miami and decided to throw in and really make this a thing. This, incidentally, is when I was working at WLRN. So I was working here as a video editor, and in my free time, we would start this festival. And the idea is that we would produce the work, and then we would screen the work. So it wasn't a festival where you take submissions, and then we filter and tell you whether or not we liked your film. We made our films, and whether they were good or bad, we screened them.
Okay.
And then through that process, learned how to make better films, learned what our sort of roles were, learned what our skill sets were. And that was where we sort of found our voice. And
that
really
was like what Kelly was saying when she took that time and
right.
Or taking that time now.
Right.
Now, that's was WLRN mentioned at the Oscars or anything? given credit.
I did my best.
It's really funny because before the program, I was saying to Andrew, now, is this the first Oscar I've ever won? Yes. No, I was going to be, is that your first major endeavor that, you know, as far as a film went, and you happened to get an Oscar?
It was definitely the most significant feature film I've ever been involved in, I've ever helped produce. There was a feature I did a couple years before that, a movie called Sun Don't Shine, which was fantastic, and I was lucky enough to work with some really talented people on that one. It did well, but you know, the bar has been raised.
Did you ever expect for this to happen? Did anybody who was working on this film ever, I mean, I know there was a lot of talk of, you know, this was a sleeper or it was a dark horse or whatever the terms are, but did you ever expect this to happen?
Going back to 2011, which is when Terrell McCraney, who wrote the play Moonlight was based on, when Terrell McCraney handed me that and said, hey, I think there's something here, maybe you're interested. You know, Terrell McCraney is, there was no doubt in my mind this was something special, not only because, you know, then I read it and you sort of see the potential and you see the opportunity there, but he's one of the most incredible writers, you know, America currently has. And so to have that opportunity, I knew it would be something special. Barry Jenkins, as a writer-director and as a filmmaker, is someone whose work I admired because he was operating and investigating things at a level that I don't feel many people are. So I knew he was someone very special.
When you say that, you mean going more in depth?
I mean, I actually have it's like an hour-long lecture I've been giving universities about what he did so well that I was so...
Can you cut it to a couple of minutes?
The short version is that what Barry does exceptionally well is identify the small, simple moments and give them... and allow them to have greater meaning. Without bombast, without spectacle, he's able to draw out the things that really stand out in a moment of human connection. And Terrell McCraney's a writer who does the same thing. He's able to write with the power of myth and turn small, simple moments into these long-lasting things. You know, you look at the story of Moonlight, the story of a scared little boy who's taken in by a man who, in a moment of kindness, takes him out for a meal. And then over the rest of this man's life, the legacy of that kindness and that relationship he built with a surrogate father becomes the defining relationship of his childhood. One moment of simple kindness becomes this sort of life-changing event. And that's the kind of thing Terrell is sensitive to, and that's something Barry's sensitive to as well. So pairing the two of them together was I knew the recipe for something fantastic. Did I think it would win 3 Oscars? No, but did I know it would be something great? Absolutely. Mm.
What was your reaction to the Oscar fiasco? Were you dying?
I mean, look, to be honest, the whole night was pretty...
surreal?
Yeah, it was pretty surreal on its own, so that just kind of added to it. I remember asking, a friend of mine had worked on 12 Years a Slave, which had won a Best Picture a couple years previous, mm-hmm. and I remember texting her being like, hey, is this how it normally goes down? And she was like, no, not at all. That's not normal, but enjoy it anyway. This is still a really good thing.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That was such a strange moment.
Yes.
All right. We're speaking about Young Arts, and at the moment we were speaking with Andrew Hevia, who's a co-producer of this year's Academy Award-winning film, Moonlight. Also with us, Kelly Kessel. She's a Young Arts alumna in voice and theater and alumni community coordinator at Young Arts. And, of course, the president and CEO of Young Arts is Carolina Garcia-Jayaram. We'll be right back. That's Pascal Leboeuf. He's a 2004 Young Arts winner in classical music and jazz. The name of this piece is Pretenders, and it's also Remy Leboeuf, and the Leboeuf brothers' recent awards include Independent Music Awards for Best Jazz Album and Best Eclectic Album in 2015.
Sort of jazz chamber music.
Yeah, it's eclectic. They performed at the Monterey Jazz Festival, the Montreal Jazz Festival, the Kennedy Center, Carnegie Hall, and Lincoln Center.
Again, the LaBeouf brothers, recent award winners, well, 2004 Young Arts winners in classical music and jazz.
That's Pascal, and Remy was a Young Arts winner in 2004 in jazz.
Yeah, some really good music there. Carolina Garcia Jayaram, tell us a little bit more about the funding of Young Arts, both the foundation nationally and also in the South Florida region.
Sure. So, as I mentioned, the Arison family were the family who helped found the organization and build the foundation for us at the beginning. But over the years, we've diversified to include support from all kinds of people, from foundations to government to a lot of great individuals here in Miami and nationally who support the organization. And as we've built the regional programs in New York and in LA, we've also built a base of support in those cities as well. We are very fortunate in terms of having the support we have to be able to reach as many of these young artists we do every year.
Do the alumni, as part of their role, do they become financial supporters as well often?
We've had that happen, but I think more often they support us in other ways. They become master teachers,
right.
They open doors, they create opportunities, they hire our alumni. I mean, on this list of alumni, one of them, Doug Blush, who's a filmmaker, is the chair of our cinematic arts program, and he's employed, I don't know, dozens of our alumni over the years for his documentary films, and so they give back in numerous, multiple and deeply meaningful ways. Yeah.
How do you see support for the arts and support for artists in, what year is this? 2017. It seems like there's so many threats to funding, cuts in funding.
Absolutely. It's nothing new. I think this always happens, and
yeah.
It's why philanthropy is so important in this country, and it's an art form in and of itself to teach people how to give back and why they should. Artists are, for me, I mean, when Andrew was describing Moonlight so beautifully and Barry's role in that and as well as Terrell's, to me, it's also about artists more than anyone capture a moment in history. They really are the recorders of our time, and we have to protect them so that we better understand what happened. You know, if you look back in history, at any period in history, you look at the arts to tell you what happened there, you know, whether it's the music or the playwriting or the fashion or the food, any of that. The creative output is really what tells the story mm-hmm. of civilization. And I think if we don't protect that now, it's not this kumbaya, you know, oh, please, you know, we need the next great symphony because it's beautiful for the people. It has such more deeper, more meaningful importance than that. And I think we don't often talk about it the right way. And so we, of course, we want to support our institutions, but the importance of supporting individual artists and creation for them, I think, is what's difficult to do. You know, we aren't really set up to support individual artists for the most part. Most foundations aren't able to do it. So as individuals, I think supporting something like Young Arts is so important because you get to really support the artists themselves and the creative output that they're working on themselves. And that's pretty rare. For the most part, you know, organizations are what most people think to support.
Tell us more about you and your connections in multiple cities in the artistic communities.
Our connections, Young Arts connections?
And yours, yes.
Well, I've worked, I spent many years here in Miami and also before that in New York. In New York, I was working in the literary field. I worked for an organization called PEN, which is the largest international writers organization. I worked mm-hmm. there for many years, supporting writers and organizations and kids to have access to books and literature. And then moved here and founded an organization called Legal Art that's still around and provides support for artists.
Yeah, tell us about that. And that is still around, isn't it?
It is. 15 years later. So that organization I founded while I was in law school at University of Miami, and was really designed to give young artists, or artists in general, in Miami access to legal support. So we began the year that Art Basel started, and began mainly for visual artists, but then expanded to all the disciplines. And what was unique about it was that artists were able to barter their artwork for legal services. So it was great for the legal community, it was great for the art community, and then it expanded into other things. We built a residency and did professional development education, and now we also manage a major grant from the Warhol Foundation that we re-grant out to artists here in Miami. So it's gone on to do a lot of really interesting
stuff. So you're an artist, attorney, and an administrator.
Right.
And you studied cooking and writing,
right,
in college. Okay. A Renaissance woman.
Now I'm on the board of Cannonball, though. So.
And with the legal trade-off, you must have a great collection at home.
I do. I have a lot of great artwork, and a lot of it from the artists who, for me, are really the renegade founders of the art scene here in Miami. A lot of my friends who started, and two of them are alumni of ours, Hernan Bass and Daniel Arsham, for example, who were here in those early days. But now we have such a big, burgeoning art scene here.
I wanted to ask you, Andrew, you hold a master's in media entrepreneurship, correct?
All right. Yes.
Okay. Okay. So how important is the business side of filmmaking? How important is knowing that?
I mean, I have found it to be essential, but as a producer, my approach is maybe a little bit different. That particular degree, I went to Fordham University. I went to grad school there, and that program was really flexible and allowed me to learn a lot of things that were important to me. How do I phrase this? When I went to grad school, I know I had a choice. I could have gone to a more traditional film program, and like the Peter Stark Producing Program in California, and done those programs that teach you how to make films the way they are currently made and the industry the way it exists. And my interest was in learning a new way to look at the work I was already making. And that particular program really focused on using the language of sort of tech and the way tech companies approach their projects and look at the way the internet is affecting the way media exists and is shared today. So, we studied more about Netflix and the influence on Netflix, but theoretically how Netflix and programs like that change us from an age of scarcity to an age of abundance and how that affects pricing. The best example of why that is useful to me is actually a Young Arts example. Because while I was at Fordham, I studied operations management. I had a class in operations management, which is basically how to run a more efficient factory. And you learn about slack times and efficiencies and where your bottlenecks are. And I had graduated, come down to Young Arts, and Terrell McCraney had asked me to help produce a theater piece for Young Arts at their Outside the Box events. And he says, here's the problem. We have the Young Arts campus. We want to occupy that space. We have like 3 hours, but there is no start time. There is no beginning and end. Our show needs to happen between 7 and 9, and people will show up whenever they want to, and we have to make them feel like they're not missing it. How do we design that? And I said, I just studied operations management. If we switch our time and attention for the raw materials of our factory, we can design a system that allows people to enter and exit and feel like they're part of the show no matter when they arrive. So we designed an entrance place that would carry you for about 5 minutes, and once that was done, it would unlock a door and you would move to the next station, and then people could come in and we'd always be able to collect and control the flow. And then Terrell wrote a play based on Romeo and Juliet around the sort of different areas I built him. But not only were we able to do that together, I was able to give him diagrams that explain, like, wait, 5 minutes here, but if it takes 3 minutes to do that, 2 minutes between there, the drink station will take about 4 minutes. And as long as you build that into your play, we're able to continue, so the climax happens and everyone's on the same page.
That's right. Did you see Sleep No More by any chance in New York?
Very strong influence.
I saw – oh, it was. Okay, I just saw that. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it came from sort of a sideways direction. When I studied that at Fordham, I did not know I would use that information. But what it allowed me to do was look at the work I was already doing with a different lens, and it gave me more tools to do what I do, hopefully better.
We have to take a break. I forgot about that.
Well, before we break, why don't we open up the phones if you'd like to
We don't really have much.
Call up with a comment or a question. We have enough time. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Also, email radio@wlrn.org if you have a comment or question.
Or we'll maybe you're a Young Arts alumna or alumni.
Of course. We'll be back with more.
Thank you.
Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman back with today's Topical Currents. We're talking about the Young Arts Program with the Young Arts Foundation President and CEO. She's Carolina Garcia Jayaram. Also, Kelly Kessel. She's the Alumni Community Coordinator at Young Arts, also voice and theater. And also, Andrew Hevia, a great filmmaker, an alumnus of the Young Arts Program as well. And, of course, he was the co-producer of the film Moonlight, the Oscar Award-winning film. Tell me, Kelly Kessel, you were talking about how much thought you put into your compositions, and there's a tremendous amount of competition you must have with pop music, being a vocalist. How do you deal with that, trying to advance your career amidst that?
Yeah, I think the important thing for me, like I said, is really making authentic work. And I love to perform, I love to write, and I love music. And so for me, you know, the success in terms of fame or making it on the radio or competing with all of these other artists is not the focus for me. That's not necessarily the goal. You know, if I can create a song that I'm happy about that reaches any number of people and inspires at least one person, I think that that's worth what I'm doing no matter
what.
And
if it happens, it happens.
Yeah, if it happens, it happens. You know, I think everything happens for a reason. I studied computer science in school. You know, I have my degree in computer
science. Your fallback?
Yeah, my fallback. And that's really inspired a lot of my music as well in terms of, you know, what are the different ways in which I can use my knowledge in computer science to help me compose. And so those kind of projects are fun for me. You know, I make music because I love it and not necessarily because I want to be the most viewed on YouTube or you know, the most played on the radio. I'm not good about social media. I don't have very many social media channels. I don't care very much about the attention. It's more about, you know, the quality of the work.
So the Kennedy Center performance was sort of part of the highlight for you.
Yeah, you know, I think that was one of my favorite experiences with Young Arts and otherwise. It's so wonderful just to be surrounded by so many talented people in such a sacred space. You know, one of my favorite memories from that night was actually going backstage after my performance and having this high of, you know, a standing ovation and mm-hmm. just the feeling you get after you've kind of put yourself out there in such a large way. And backstage at the Kennedy Center, the walls are lined with photos of all of the people who have performed
there. Luminaries.
Yeah, and just kind of walking through that backstage hallway amongst all of those portraits and realizing that, you know, I shared the same space with so many people who have inspired me, you know, on my way to that place. And, you know, I think that's what music is really about. You're sharing yourself with everyone around you. And you never know what that can create in the future.
Andrew, I'm sorry.
I wanted some of her musical influences.
Top three. Well, I would say Motown in general had a huge influence on me when I was growing up. I think for Christmas I got the entire discography one year and listened to it nonstop. Etta James especially. Ooh. And then more recently I've been listening to people like Kimbra and Leon LaHavas, who are wonderful songwriters and kind of pushing the boundaries of what pop and jazz music are. And those are what really inspire me now.
The composition just... I mean, the fact that you did music and lyrics is pretty phenomenal and have such a beautiful voice.
Thank you so much.
Andrew, I want to know, Leave the Bus Through the Broken Window, this documentary, so it was already nominated for something, so it's made.
I was really fortunate and won a Fulbright U.S. research, a student research grant to go to Hong Kong, and I spent almost a year living in Hong Kong making this documentary. And the documentary is, incidentally, a quasi-sequel to a film I made while I was working at WLRN, a documentary about the impact of Art Basel Miami Beach and it's the way it sort of catalyzed an art community here in Miami. So Art Basel Hong Kong opened a couple of years ago, and I went to make a documentary about a similar topic. So Fulbright allowed me the freedom to make that film. But over the course of my year, I really pushed the film in a whole different direction and made something that is quite a bit more personal. The way I describe the film now, it's about I went there to make a film about art and made a film about heartbreak and the time I got lost in a shopping mall for 2 hours.
How old were you?
This was last year.
Oh, okay.
Hong Kong could be quite bewildering.
Very confusing. Yeah. Okay. And but so the film, we're currently editing the film. I've got a really talented editor named Carlos Rivera, incidentally, a Miami kid who also worked at WLRN, is now out in L.A. doing incredible
Danny
things.
Danny Rivera?
Carlos Rivera.
Oh, Carlos Rivera.
Okay. Yeah, he's now an Emmy-winning editor, but started here. And we're working on the film, and we were just accepted into the IFP Documentary Filmmakers Lab, which is a year-long mentorship program that helps us develop a sort of a better version of that film. And since the film is such a departure for me, it's actually a really good example of me trying to find my voice as an artist. Having done a certain type of documentary for a certain number of years, it becomes familiar.
Will we be able to see that?
Yes, but it will probably be about a year from now.
Can you tell us about Dark Room?
The Dark Room is a fiction film that I'm producing in Hong Kong with a director named Joshua Wong, who's a Hong Kong-based director. It's a mystery thriller set in Hong Kong, which we're probably about 2 years out from that thing being finished, but a film we're very excited about.
And that's going to be a sequel? What about the sequel to Moonlight?
No, I think the phrasing on that is it's the follow-up.
The follow-up.
There is no, like, the thing I do next.
Okay, yeah.
There's
it's just the thing you do next.
Yeah. Moonlight 2 is not going to happen.
What do you do in your spare time, Andrew?
I mean, to be honest,
no.
I'm really lucky that I'm finally able to do the volume of work that I want to do. And because I foolishly set up a project in Hong Kong, now when one part of the world goes to bed, the other part wakes up. So mostly it's I get to work in projects that I love.
It's great. And Kelly, do you have a song that you're working on at the moment? Or two?
I have pieces of a lot of them.
Okay.
No, right now, like I said, my focus is really on finding what that sounds like and figuring out who I am as an artist. And I think all of the songs and everything else will follow once that kind of clicks into place.
Well, it's been a pleasure having all of you. That's Kelly Kessel. She's a Young Arts alumna in voice and theater, singer and actress. And also the alumni community coordinator at Young Arts. Also with us, Carolina Garcia Jayaram, president and CEO of Young Arts. When are we going to see the plans for the new campus?
I think about this time next year is a safe bet.
Okay.
It'll be very exciting.
And Andrew Hevia is a Young Arts alumnus, filmmaker, cinematic arts 2003. 2003 is when he graduated. He co-produced this year's Academy Award winning three-time Academy Award-winning film, Moonlight. Thanks so much, all of you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
This was great.
And that wraps up today's edition. It was produced by Polly Landis. Tech support from online content producer Jason Zabka. Richard Ives is lead producer. As always, it's easy to download free audio archives from our radio TV website, WLRN.org. And you can listen via the iTunes podcast and also visit the Topical Currents Facebook page. Get your creative juices flowing, Bonnie.
I just want to say we have a follow-up of yesterday's show, which is that Travis Kalanick did take a 3-month leave of absence from Uber.
Just as you thought.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's program is No Mystery. We'll profile South Florida's Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Edna Buchanan. From a small Miami Beach community paper, she mastered crime reporting at the Miami Herald, of course, and has gone on to write some 20 fiction and nonfiction books. Tune in tomorrow for Edna Buchanan's appearance. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.